It's 16 hours GMT. I'm Rebecca Kesby, and this is Europe Today from the BBC. The nuclear debate is back on in Germany. The government says renewable energy still can't power the country. Nuclear is set to stay for another 10 years.
We have set up an all-encompassing program to build up renewable energies. Germany has never seen this kind of program for renewable energies before.
Also, friends of a journalist found hanged in Belarus say his death was not suicide.
Nobody believes that this was a suicide. None of his family, none of his close associates, nobody from Charles 97, they think this was a political murder.
And this man on why he wants to break the sound barrier in a free-fall skydive from 40,000 metres.
If you're in the right physical condition and you've trained properly, you'll be able to handle the risks. But if not, it will be catastrophic.
First, the news.
BBC News with David Austin. The Pakistani Taliban says it carried out the latest suicide bomb attack, in which a car laden with explosives destroyed a police station in northwest Pakistan. It says it did so because police had encouraged local people to form militias against the Taliban. The bombing killed 19 people. Roland Burke reports from Islamabad.
Eyewitnesses told the BBC that the attacker struck at the rear of the police station. The blast from the car bomb brought down the roof of the building and damaged homes nearby. Rescue workers have been digging through the rubble in Lakhi Marwat in the northwest of Pakistan. Police officers are among the dead, as well as children, according to reports. The attack is the third in a week following a relative lull in violence during the worst flooding in Pakistan's history.
The Spanish government has firmly rejected the announcement of a ceasefire by the outlawed Basque separatist group ETA, calling it insufficient. On Sunday, ETA said it would halt its violent campaign for independence from Spain. From Madrid, Sarah Rainsford reports.
This is a hardline response from the Spanish government. There will be no peace talks with ETA. The Interior Minister, Alfredo Pérez Rubalcaba, has described ETA's ceasefire declaration as insufficient and says the government is very sceptical about its motives. On Sunday, ETA announced it was ready to push for Basque independence through democratic means. But Mr. Rubalcaba says ETA has broken too many ceasefires before to be trusted. Instead, he said Spain's anti-terrorist policy will remain intact, an approach he says has made ETA weaker now than ever.
The Lebanese Prime Minister, Saad Hariri, has said he made a mistake in accusing Syria of assassinating his father, the former Prime Minister Rafiq Hariri, who was killed in a bomb attack in 2005. Mr. Hariri said it was a political accusation that had been made prematurely. Syria has been widely accused of being behind the attack, but it denies involvement. Bob Trevelyan reports.
Saad Hariri has repeatedly and explicitly blamed Syria for the death of his father in a massive truck bombing 5.5 years ago. But since becoming Prime Minister last year, at the head of a fragile unity government, Mr. Hariri has been pursuing a rapprochement with Lebanon's larger neighbour. Now he's taken the reconciliation a step further by clearly repudiating his earlier accusations. Mr. Hariri said Lebanon and Syria had historic brotherly relations, and that an international investigation into his father's killing had been misled by false testimony.
A strike by more than 1 million public sector workers in South Africa has been suspended. Trade union leaders said they'd not accepted the government's offer of pay increases, but would halt the industrial action for 3 weeks to allow their members time to consider it. Observers say the strikes, which closed hospitals and schools, have strained the political alliance between the South African government and the unions. World News from the BBC. Russia and Israel have signed a long-term agreement on military cooperation. The Russian Defence Minister, Anatoly Serdyukov, gave few details, but said his country wanted to make use of the Israeli military's experience to modernise its armed forces. Earlier this year, Russia bought 12 unmanned aircraft from Israel, and Russian military personnel are being trained how to use them. China is investigating the qualifications of all its commercial pilots after revelations that more than 200 of them had lied about their records or flying histories. The Civil Aviation Authority found that more than 100 of the pilots who'd falsified their details worked for Shenzhen Airlines, the parent company of the carrier involved in a crash last month in which 42 people were killed. The former British Prime Minister Tony Blair has cancelled a book signing on Wednesday in central London to promote his autobiography. His decision came after his motorcade was pelted with eggs at a similar event in the Irish capital, Dublin. Naomi Grimley has the details.
It was at the weekend that Tony Blair went to Dublin to sign copies of his new book, A Journey. But 200 anti-war protesters turned up at the event, shouting slogans and trying to pelt Mr. Blair with eggs and shoes. The Dublin experience has clearly made the former Premier have second thoughts. His office has now issued a statement saying that he doesn't want to inconvenience the public and cause the police more hassle and cost just because of a mere book signing.
Naomi Grimley reporting. A British clergyman has been jailed for 4 years for conducting hundreds of sham marriages for illegal migrants desperate to stay in Britain. More than 300 of the weddings involved Africans and East Europeans. The authorities became suspicious when they noticed a 30-fold increase in the number of marriages taking place at a small church in the south of England. And those are the latest stories from BBC News.
You're listening to the BBC World Service. I'm Rebecca Kesby, and this is Europe Today. Angela Merkel's government is under pressure to defend its decision to extend the lifespan of Germany's nuclear power stations by at least 10 years. The plan had been to scrap all nuclear power by 2021 in favour of renewable energy. Now the government says renewables are not ready to bear the burden of powering Europe's biggest economy. The Environment Minister Norbert Röttgen said the revenue collected from nuclear companies will be put towards renewable technology.
Let me emphasize that with the common position we've agreed today, we have established the timetable that will take us into the age of renewable energies. We have set up an all-encompassing program to build up renewable energies. Germany has never seen this kind of program for renewable energies before.
Well, the decision has sparked a furious debate in Germany. We brought together Peter Altmaier, chief whip of the CDU party, and first I spoke to Ingrid Nestle, energy and economy spokesperson for the German Green Party.
Well, I do think it's a really bad deal for the German public. It means that nuclear power will run in Germany into the 2040s, although nobody in the whole world knows what to do with the highly radioactive waste. And the companies will make about 100 billion profit out of it. Exactly those companies who are rising electricity prices and making big, big profits and really making the small people pay. And actually, I do think that security and health really played no role at all in this deal. And you can see that, for example, because Krümmel, one of the worst power stations we have, well, they get an extra 14 years, even more than others.
But this is really only a delay in the strategy. They haven't changed the strategy as such, have they?
Well, there was a real consensus. There was a plan how to build the energy system, to rebuild the German energy system, how to move to renewables and efficiency, get away from nuclear. There was a plan, and lots of studies have shown that it works very well. And people who invest in the electricity sector, they relied on this plan. And now they find that overnight they are faced by a completely different situation where the old companies who block out the new ones, where they really get the major part of all the power production for a long time.
Okay, let's bring in Peter Altmaier now. He's the chief whip with the CDU. What do you make of that point, Peter, that old companies are managing to block out emerging companies with greener credentials?
Well, I always appreciate a good debate with my Green colleagues, but in this particular aspect, they are wrong, because we are doing nothing else than catching up with the European practice of relying on nuclear power plants for a foreseeable future. It is a bridging technology, and in the United Kingdom, in Italy, in Sweden, parliaments are considering even new nuclear power plants. That's nothing we are doing, but we say, okay, we have quite safe power plants, and we will now not end the production as it was foreseen by the Red-Green coalition government in the end 90s, but we will do it step by step together with the very courageous support for renewable energy.
You say you want to catch up with other European countries. Why don't you lead other European countries? Lots of other countries look to Germany as having the political will and the backing to help renewable energies. Why don't you lead on this?
We have to reconcile two different aspects. One is the protection of the environment, the support for renewable energies. That's what we are doing now. And in a much clearer and more decisive way than many other European countries. And the second is Germany is one of the biggest industrialized countries. We are a big exporter in world markets, and therefore we have to provide cheap and safe energy. We still consider, by the way, nuclear energy as safer and better for the environment, cleaner for the environment than, for example, coal and other old-fashioned types of energy.
That's a legitimate point, isn't it, Ingrid? Everybody in Germany wants cheap and effective electricity, and so far renewable energy hasn't measured up.
Nuclear electricity is not cheap. And you can see that, for example, if you compare European countries with and without nuclear, and there are lots of them without, and actually the number of nuclear power plants has decreased over the last 5 years, last 10 years, last 20 years. So that the trend, the worldwide trend, is against nuclear and not pro, if you look at the facts and not just at the ideological talk. And if you compare these countries, you can see that there's no correlation at all between electricity prices and whether there's nuclear power in place or not.
But can renewable energy companies now or in the very near future supply Germany with enough electricity?
Yes, they can. I mean, even without this extra deal from yesterday, we have nuclear power until the 2020s. And if you take all this electricity, which we can't get away anyway, the renewables and lots of studies have shown that can do the rest. It is even the opposite side, that towards the 2030s, the renewables have to grow slower than they can because there's so much old capacity in the market. And even the study which the government themselves have published last week on their energy scenarios says that a high percentage of nuclear means considerably less wind energy in the system. So it is nuclear or renewables at this moment, and the government has definitely decided on nuclear.
Peter Altmaier.
The problem is not the number of windmills producing safe energy. The problem is storage of it, and the problem are the electricity networks to distribute the energy. And therefore, we need some time in order to develop the infrastructure for renewable energies. And to be frank and honest, in the 90s, when the red-green coalition government was considering nuclear energy, they decided to go on with nuclear power plants for more than 20 years. And what we have decided yesterday night is a rather modest extension of this period.
So first of all, yes, it's right. We need grid capacity, but the scenarios to show that we can do the renewables are actually another generation. They are further on because they show that we have the electricity in every hour of the year, whereas the scenarios that the government produced just shows that on average for the year it works.
Ingrid Nestle of the Green Party in Germany and Peter Altmaier, their chief whip for the CDU, speaking to me a short time ago. What do you think about all this? Has Germany got its energy plan right? Where do you stand on the issue of nuclear energy? You can send us your thoughts, comment on our Facebook site, just search for BBC Europe Today, or you can send us an email, of course, worldhaveyoursay@bbc.com. And let's take a look at the breakdown, really, on the energy supply for Germany at the moment. John Bithry is our business reporter. He joins us now. John, how important is nuclear power to Germany in their energy mix at the moment?
Well, it's fairly important. About a quarter of Germany's electricity is produced by nuclear power. Now, compare that to about 15% produced from renewables like wind, solar and biomass. The rest, about 60%, still comes from conventional fossil fuels, coal, natural gas and so on. Now, nuclear power is generated at 17 plants, as you might expect. The premiers of the two states with the most plants in them, they are Baden-Württemberg and Bavaria, are the most outspoken in support of extending the lifespan of nuclear power. Big local employers, and they also provide energy cheaper than market rates to several local industries.
Both those German politicians were referring to companies, the big nuclear companies involved in all this. Who are they?
Well, there are four of them. You've probably heard of at least a couple of them, E.ON and RWE, both big players across Europe in the energy market. There's also Sweden's Vattenfall and Energy Baden-Württemberg. Since this decision was announced, the shares in the publicly traded companies, E.ON and RWE, they've actually gone up. Shareholders obviously quite pleased at the prospect of making some more money because these plants are staying open. That's despite the companies also agreeing to pay a total of about 30 billion euros over several years in new taxes for the privileges of keeping these plants open. So has the decision been the result of lobbying by the energy firms? Well, that's a question I put to Claudia Kempfert, the director of the Department for Energy at the German Institute for Economic Research.
I don't think it's all about the lobbying if you look at the whole energy concept, which is far more than this. It's 80% electricity production by renewable and energy efficiency improvement, to say it in a simple way. But nuclear power does not have a future in Germany. It's limited. We have now a lifetime extension of 12 years, and that's it, forever. The utilities have a positive impact for sure, but on the other hand, they already know that they need to bring the energy system into a future by renewable energy.
Why do different countries in Europe have different positions on this? Britain has just commissioned a new generation of nuclear power stations. France is famously pro-nuclear, one of the biggest nuclear producers in the world. And yet Germany's waving goodbye to it, or wants to. Why the difference, do you think?
Well, I don't think that in Germany the nuclear power has a future because people simply don't want it. They have a security aspect in it because they don't think that nuclear power produced in a secure way electricity. And this is what the people want. And the politicians do what the people want. And this is exactly what we see right now. In other countries, the nuclear power security aspect is appreciated in a different way. And especially in France, which has a very high share of nuclear power, the security aspect is not there, especially not if we compare it with Germany. And the people really do judge it in a different way. And this is how Germany judges it, and the people don't want it.
Claudia Kempfert there from the German Institute for Economic Research.
Thanks very much, John Bithrie, there of our business staff. You're listening to the BBC World Service. This is Europe Today. Coming up later in the programme, an emergency question in the British Parliament about allegations of journalists tapping into politicians' phones.
I consider it appropriate, as Home Secretary, that this government takes the view that it is for the Metropolitan Police on an operational matter to decide what the right course of action is.
That's still to come, but first, ETA's ceasefire declaration over the weekend has been met with deep scepticism from all sides in Spanish politics. The Interior Minister, Alfredo Pérez Rubalcabas, dismissed the announcement, saying that until the group renounced violence forever, there would be no change in the government's position of treating ETA as a terrorist organisation.
I think the word insufficient reflects quite well the position not just of the government, but of all the democratic parties. It refers to two things. It refers to what sectors of the radical Basque national left have been advocating would happen, and it also refers, and this is much more important, to the minimum democratic conditions which society is imposing on the radical Basque nationalist left, today illegal, to return to normality. Minimum democratic conditions which are very clear and which are summed up in the phrase ETA must end violence completely forever.
Well, it's not the first time members of ETA have declared a ceasefire. A similar announcement was made in 2006, but it didn't last very long. Later that year, two people were killed when the group bombed a car park at Madrid airport. Well, our correspondent Mark Lowen is in San Sebastian in the Basque region. He's been following this. Thanks for joining us, Mark. The politicians have every right to be sceptical about this, don't they, given the history?
Absolutely. We've been here before, as you say, in 2006, when the ceasefire was broken 9 months after it was declared, when two people were killed at Madrid airport because of an ETA bomb. In 1998 as well, ETA declared a ceasefire and then broke it several months later. That history has meant that a lot of people here are apprehensive. They're cautious about ETA's declaration of a ceasefire. But there is also, on the streets of this region, there is also some considerable excitement at the prospect that perhaps this time is different. Perhaps there is a chance that the ceasefire will hold and that an end will be brought to ETA's very violent armed history, a history in which over 820 people have been killed in the fight for ETA's struggle for independence of the Basque region, a region that straddles northern Spain and southern France. As you heard there, the response from Madrid has been very, very harsh. The Interior Minister also talked about how he was not going to change a dot or a comma in his anti-terrorist policy. Now, I've been out and about in the gorgeous little narrow streets of San Sebastian Old Town to ask people their reactions to the ceasefire announcement.
At the beginning, I think it's very positive, but the most important thing would be to finish with everything and leave the guns in the corner. And so society wants to be peaceful.
Do you believe that it will hold?
I like to believe it.
I think it's great. It's something that we are waiting for. And I think every one of us is going to be happy with this. We are in an historical moment and we have to make some positive reaction of that. It's something good.
I am very sceptic. You know, 10 times they announced the same thing and 10 times they broke it after. So now we are not very, very excited about this idea. For us, is not new.
Views from San Sebastian. And Mark, what do we know about the structure of the leadership of ETA at the moment? Is there any evidence to suggest that maybe there's been a shift?
There is, because over the last few years, ETA has really been decapitated of its leadership. Over the last 2 years, for example, five leaders have been caught, arrested by French and Spanish police. And so that change of leadership has severely weakened ETA as an armed organisation. ETA really is at its weakest it's ever been in its 51-year history. There is also a great deal of political pressure from nationalist parties here for ETA to renounce violence and to start a new peaceful dialogue with the Spanish government and to fight for independence in a different way. And that is really why a lot of people here believe that there is now a difference between now and 2006. For example, I've just spoken to the Basque National Party. That is a moderate nationalist party in this region. And they say that they are not happy with ETA's statement. They say that they can't be confident until ETA indefinitely renounces violence. And they say they are sceptical. It is a small step towards peace, but they want an unconditional and indefinite renunciation of arms. So I think what you're seeing is the overwhelming majority in the Basque region want violence to come to an end, want ETA to put their arms struggle behind them. There is pressure from the Spanish government. ETA is at its very, very weakest, and so that really has created the conditions that have given some people hope that this ceasefire may just hold.
Okay, Mark Lowen, thank you very much. Well, ETA is thought to be responsible for more than 800 deaths over the past 40 years. Politicians have learnt to treat their declarations with suspicion, but is there any reason now to believe that there may be the beginnings of change within the group? One man with a lot of experience in this area is the South African human rights lawyer Brian Curran. In March this year, he issued the Brussels Declaration, backed by Desmond Tutu and F.W. de Klerk, among others, that called for a permanent, fully verified ceasefire from ETA. We managed to track him down in the back of a jeep in rural Madagascar, so sorry for the quality of the phone line. But I began by asking him if he believed that ETA and their statement was sincere.
They have said it before, and I'm not going to be saying to anybody whether they can be trusted or not. But I think what is important is the background to this declaration, which is completely different from the background to all previous declarations. And if I can just sketch those, first of all, the declaration is an unconditional and unilateral declaration. It was not preceded by any discussions or negotiations with the Spanish government. Secondly, you also have to see the declaration in the context of politics that has happened in the Basque country for the last 3 years. And in the context of the leadership that was taken by, I would say, the left political leadership and the mandate that they got from their own constituency as a consequence of a deep consultation process that took place. So laying the foundation for this ceasefire declaration really came from the political leadership. And in my view, what is happening is that ETA is following suit and, in a way, giving expression to a view that has already been taken by the vast majority of the Abbott Sada left constituency in the Basque country.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear you say that, because the government has dismissed this straight away, saying that ETA can't be trusted. And of course, in the past, we've seen other governments refusing to speak to what they describe as terrorists, only to find out that, in fact, there has been some kind of communication on some level. Whatever the government says in public to this declaration, are they going to be encouraged by it?
Well, I think it might be, but I don't think that anyone expected them to respond positively. I certainly didn't. I know that there is absolutely no trust whatsoever between the Spanish government and ETA. There have been too many disappointments in the past without going into who was to blame for those failures. But the fact is that there is no trust.
And just lastly, how optimistic are you that they can do it?
I honestly believe that what we have witnessed now is historical. And I say that for the two reasons that I've already given, the fact that it's unilateral, and secondly, the fact that it is politically led, politically driven, rather than led and driven by the military wing. I think that makes a huge difference. The fact that the vast majority of the Basque people who support the pro-independence left have given their approval to non-violent means, and also the fact that there is international interest in this. And I think there's an awareness within the Basque country that political support certainly will not be sustained if there's a return to violence.
Brian Curran there, a South African human rights lawyer, speaking to me a short time ago. Now, Tony Blair has cancelled his next scheduled book signing in central London. The former British Prime Minister said he didn't want protesters and protests against him to inconvenience other shoppers. This weekend, his car was pelted with eggs and shoes during a visit to a bookshop in the Irish capital, Dublin. Let's speak to our British Affairs correspondent, Naomi Grimley, now. Naomi, what kind of protests had been planned around London?
Well, they were very similar to the ones that we saw in Dublin at the weekend. Large numbers of people from the Stop the War coalition turning up. And in those demonstrations in Dublin, Tony Blair had been pelted with things like eggs and shoes and bottles, and also subjected to quite a lot of abuse, things like the chanting of the words blood on your hands. And Tony Blair clearly feels that he doesn't need to put up with this because his book is selling well. And also he's doing a round of media interviews at the moment. So he simply cancelled the only British book signing, which was due on Wednesday in central London.
Obviously uncomfortable to be pelted with eggs and so on, but were there concerns about his security as well?
Well, I think there always are where Mr. Blair is concerned. Of course, like all other former premiers, he has heavy security. But in particular, for him, the security has to be really very strong. And that's because there are campaigns to try and make a citizen's arrest of Mr. Blair. In fact, one of the protesters in Dublin did actually try to do that. So there's special worries about his security. And I think he probably came to the decision with his security detail that it was best if they didn't attempt this.
Mr. Blair has already said that any proceeds he makes from the selling of the book are going to go towards a British military charity. How well is his book selling so far?
Well, his book is actually selling very well. It's flying off the shelves, in fact. Both Amazon, the online bookseller, and Waterstones say it's the best-selling memoirs of all time, for their British audiences at least. So it's certainly selling very well, and I think that's one reason why he doesn't necessarily feel he has to appear in central London, because after all, the book is popular in its own right.
And just briefly, is he going to the States next?
Yes, all along, Rebecca, this book was really pitched at an American audience rather than a British audience. I think Tony Blair feels he gets a more sympathetic reaction there. And he is indeed going back to America with his family in tow to try and sell the book over there.
OK, Naomi Grimley, thank you very much for joining us. You're with Europe Today. Stay tuned for the latest world news coming next.
If you're new to the BBC World Service and are trying to work out what's on when, we've got a neat little way to help you. Go to bbcworldservice.com and click How and When to Listen.